turning to follow the edge of the swamp away from the lake. She paused again to point eastward to where, beyond the swampy ground, there was a small cluster of huts on the shore.
"Bahida," says she, smiling. "Remember, do you think you could have found it?"
I said I was glad I hadn't had to try, and she led on again by the swamp, which was now flowing south quite distinctly, and presently, when we'd pushed our way through marshy thickets, buzzing with mosquitoes, and mounted a grassy rise, the swampy flow had become a stream between jungly banks. A mile or so further on, it was broadening into a river proper, shining ruddy in the sunset, and Ulaba gave a great heaving sigh and stretched her arms high above her head.
"There it runs, the great Abai. A few miles to the silver smoke, and not far beyond, the camp of my people."
She came to my side and put an arm about me, inviting an embrace.
"Have we not travelled well together, Effendi?"
I cried, "By gad, hadn't we just?" and gave her a loving squeeze and a hearty kiss, telling her she was the queen of guides, while noting to myself that she was now talking of the camp of her people, not Queen Mastiat's. Very soon now I must discover what was at work behind that triumphant smile, and whatever it was, prepare myself for some nimble footwork. Oh, and if possible, carry out the task Napier had given me, and ensure that the Wallogallas closed the trap about Magdala, whoever was occupying their tribal throne. I half expected Ulaba to advert to it, but she volunteered nothing, so I must wait and see, composing myself to sleep on the banks of the great Abai, and reflecting unprofitably on the irony that, given a small boat and enough grub, and if the Napiers and Ulubas and assorted Abs and Bedouin let me alone, I could have floated a few thousand miles downstream in peace and tranquillity to Shepherd's or the Hôtel de Nuit in Cairo. I woke suddenly with a hand gripping my arm and another over my mouth, and was about to lash out in panic when I realized they were Ulubas' hands. It was just on half dawn, and she was hissing a warning in my ear.
"Still! Keep down!"
She was out of her blanket, snaking away across the turf, damp with dew, and I followed her with my innards turning over at this sudden alarm.
"See! Yonder across the river!"
I followed her pointing finger and froze where I lay. On the far side of the water, which was barely 50 yards broad at this point, a line of horsemen was emerging from the jungle, pricking down to the bank. They were lancers, 40 or 50 of them, trim in white robes and turbans and breastplates, one or two with chainmail shoulder guards, their leader wearing a steel casque and knight's gauntlets and carrying a silver shield. They ranged along the bank, dismounting at his word of command to water their horses, their voices drifting across the misty surface. More in desperation than hope, I wondered if they might be Mastiat's people. But Ulaba shook her head impatiently and wormed her way backwards into the shelter of the bushes, dragging blanket and saddlebag with her, and signing to me to do likewise.
"They are Theodore's guardsmen, his household cavalry. That silver shield is carried only by nobles high in his service."
Her whisper was fierce but steady.
"Those boats we saw last night, making towards Adina, they must have been at Korata, bearing word of us and where we were going."
She screwed her eyes shut in fury, clenching her fist.
"God of gods, why did I not kill that loose-tongued fool?"
"Hold on. How do you know they're looking for us? You can't be sure."
"A silver shield abroad before dawn, with picked troops of the Emperor. I can be sure they are not on manoeuvres. He would never leave such an elite to garrison Korata when he is marching on Magdala. No, he will have sent them west, the moment he learned, doubtless from Yando's vermin, that a British officer was coming south, plainly to enlist aid from Mastiat and the Wallogallas. They will have been scouring Begemda for us, and now those peasants scum at Adina have given them our scent, and they are following it."
Talking like a book, as usual, and keeping her head, she signed me to silence and crawled forward again to a solitary bush, the braided head cocked to listen. After a moment she was back, her lips at my ear.
"They are looking for a place to cross. Then they will sweep both banks downstream, and we must be the quarry. No ordinary fugitive would be worth such a hunt."
"Oh, God, what can we do?" She smiled grimly.
"Run! Away from the river, before they can cross. We can circle wide and come back to it, for we'll be swifter afoot in the jungle than they can be on horseback. If we can reach the silver smoke ahead of them, we shall be safe. for they'll venture no closer to Mastiette's army than that."
A word of command sounded across the water. They